Hi, everyone. Welcome to Nancy's Metaphysical World and More. My name is Nancy, and I host the show. And today, I have a great guest on. She is a world-known psychic. Her name is Victoria Bullis. So, Victoria, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Sorry, I just coughed there for a minute. Thank you. I booked this a long time ago. I've been looking forward to this for months now.
Good. I'm so glad. Victoria, let's do this. Let's tell the people a little bit about who you are. What really kind of got you started and how you knew that you were psychic? Because most people, I believe, are psychic. I just don't know if they understand that or if sometimes it makes them afraid. So let's kind of hear your story a little bit.
Nancy, we only have an hour.
I know. So you got to make it short and sweet.
There's not too much sweet about it. When I was in university, I went to a fellow student friend's parents' place in Santa Barbara, California, when they were off in Europe for a while. We drove down for a weekend. We were going to go to the beach. We had our little bikinis on, a few dollars, her driver's license, her keys, and not much more. So we got lost because Santa Barbara had changed since she was growing up, and she was trying to take a shortcut. It was meant to be. So we ended up in this really funky part of town, and all of a sudden we saw this palm in plywood propped up on someone's lawn. It was a very long time ago. And my friend Ann said, she didn't even say anything. She said, I said, no. My face got red. I got all agitated. I said, no, we're going to the beach. We're going to the beach. We didn't even talk about it. Oh, come on. And I said, no, we're going to the beach. So she goes, drives to the corner, looks at me, and I said, no. No conversations. No, this is not going to happen. She drives another block, stops, and looks at me, and I'm by this time my face is really flushed. And she looks at me, and she backs the car up a block and a half, parks on the other side of the street, jumps out, takes the keys, runs over, and rings the doorbell. So I have to go, too, obviously. And the woman looks at us. She was a gypsy, lots of statues, incense, long, stringy gray hair, you know, beads on the door. And I didn't know anything about gypsies because I had never... The word psychic never entered my family's realm when I was growing up, ever, not once. So she rings the doorbell. The woman looks at us and knows she's eager, I'm not. She says to Anne, she said, you come in, it'll be about 5 minutes, and then I'll come out and get you. So Anne goes right in, the door closes, and I'm stuck. So I sit on this stoop for a long time. All of a sudden, I realized I was getting very red. I was getting sunburned. I thought, my God, how long has it been? So my thought was, I have got to save Anne. I'll never forget that. And I still know her. We talk about it occasionally. And so I go to jump up and bang on the door. When the door opens and Anne walks out in a trance, the woman looks at me really afraid and negative beyond belief, pulls me by the elbow and drags me in and sits me down. So she tells me in 5 minutes I'm going to be a psychic. She said, oh, dearie, you're going to do something like I do one day. You're going to be a psychic. And she tells me, she put me in a trance in some way. And so I'm sitting there fogged out in a very foggy state. She tells me this and not much more, and I leave, and it's all over. And I was beyond belief upset. So anyway, we didn't go to the beach. We went to the library in Santa Barbara and started looking at everything. We ended up looking at ghosts, all these different things that were related. And Anne got hooked, and I didn't. So in the next couple of years, we went to two or three more in the San Francisco area. And they told her the same thing, that she was going to marry a pro ball player, her life was going to be great, all this stuff. And they all told me the same thing. Basically, you're going to be a psychic. And finally, I said to Anne, who is so into this, I didn't even want to be around her, I said, you know what? I'm never going to those people again. Please don't bring this topic up. I don't want to hear it again. So I ended up dropping Anne and never thinking I would do anything in this vein again. Well, about 3 years later, well, a few years, I don't know how many, 2 to 4 something years later, I had a dream all night. I dropped Anne, didn't want to deal with her, wouldn't return her phone calls. I had a dream all night. This is the absolute truth. All night long, I dreamt about angels. Big ones, little ones, Tinkerbell type, Michael the Archangel, all kinds of angels. They all had wings. Some were funny, humorous, big, serious. Angels all night. I can still conjure up the dream. It's called a lucid dream. didn't know anything about that, was not into this, was studying interior design. And they said I would be a psychic. And they said it's part of your life's purpose. I didn't know we had one back then. I didn't know we had one. I woke up the next morning, and instead of being euphoric that I had angels visit me all night long, I sat up in bed and went, oh, no, oh, I'm going to have to be a psychic. So then it took me a few days, but I knew I didn't know anything, nothing. And I just knew I was driven to call Anne. So I call Anne, who I haven't talked to in a long time. She picks up the phone, and she says, ah, you're finally calling me. My teachers have been telling me for months that you'd be calling any day now. Which made me want to throw the phone against the wall and smash it. But anyway, so that's really the end of the story. I ended up going to the Berkeley Psychic Institute because I knew I didn't know anything. And one thing led to another. I've never stopped studying. And that's the story, and I'm sticking to it, Nancy.
That's the best way to do it. You know what's really funny, Victoria, is that there are many people who really have psychic ability. In fact, like I said earlier, everybody does. It's just
everyone
to
does,
what
of
degree.
Course.
But there's many people who think that they have to go through all of these humongous different studies, all these humongous things, you know, in order to let any of that come out. And, you know, to me, it comes very natural. So my opinion is that you really don't have to spend years and years and years and years and years having somebody train you or teach you. You just have to trust yourself.
Well, I'm glad you said that because I thought there was something wrong with me. I didn't like these classes. I wasn't good at them. I lived in Asia for a little while by then, and had a pretty elite life. So I was used to BSers and knew who they were and so on, even though I was still young. And I didn't like the teachers. I thought they were arrogant. I didn't like the students. I didn't fit in with them. But I kept making myself go. And I ended up going for about a year and a half, and then I finally decided, I kept getting, as I started every class, not to take another one. But I kept doing it because they were trying to railroad into me that I didn't know what I was doing, that they had all the wisdom, I had none, and I needed to keep studying. So finally, one day, I decided not to take that next class. I didn't show up that night. And I thought, oh, I'm going to feel terrible about myself and so on. I really did. I was very young. Still, well, I was young. It's all relative. And I woke up the next morning, and I was so relieved I never looked back. So from then on, I chose who I wanted to work with. Metaphysical leaders, a lot of them that are still around, some of them. But I'll tell you, I wasn't very good. Can I tell you one more story?
Sure.
I was not very good. In fact, I was at the bottom of the class, bottom or second to the bottom of the class, and each class had about 10 or 12, maybe 14 people in it. And so I went to my, fourth or fifth class, and I still went after this particular class, but for a while. But this was on anything. It could have been how to heal. It didn't matter what the class was. I didn't want to be there. And I've never been a negative person. People have never, said, gee, she's a really negative person ever. But I sat there in a typical posture with my arms crossed across my chest. I didn't want to be there. And the teacher had to sit in a circle, and she moved her chair around from the inside of the circle to each person to see what they all knew. And I knew I wasn't very good. Everybody else was better than I was. I couldn't see colors very well. I couldn't do the baby stuff. So anyway, so I sat there until she came around to me. I must have been oozing hostility. She deflected or transformed or something. And she said, okay, let me take a look at you. And she went, oh, and she started to laugh. And I said, oh, what? And I got teary-eyed, this is going to be a horrible experience. And she started to laugh more. I started to cry. So, I was humiliated, angry, and so on. So anyway, she said, no. Listen, she said, you don't belong in this class. And then I started crying more. She said, you don't need this. She said, you are going to have an amazing ability to tune into the other side, anything that is not part of the earth, from angels to people's dead grandmothers and so on. And I looked at her and I went, oh my God. And she said, what? I said, your grandmother's standing right behind me. And I said, she's wearing such and such and such and such. And she said, yes, so that's the way she always appears to me too. And that was like the shift, the catalyst, the aha moment, the epiphany, the whatever. And from then on, I got pretty darn good quickly.
Yeah, and it's really funny, Victoria, because people will spend tons and tons of money. And what really, I think, goes on is that whatever that class is about is not quite resonating with the person that's there. And so, in my opinion, each person needs to find really what resonates with them and then go from there. Because once you start resonating with the energy, it's totally open to more and more.
Exactly.
But see, people are under this impression that they're like you. I'm not good. I'm not this. I'm not that. I don't want to be here. This is a waste of time, blah, 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 only to find out that you're tremendous at, you know, being a psychic, intuitive, whatever words you want to choose.
Well, I was in total fear. I mean, I was afraid. You know, I'm sure past life it was strung up somewhere or another several times by doing it. You know, so there's a lot to what you just said. Some of it's fear. Some of my clients, you know, that are afraid to talk to me, I can always tell who's, and this is not a plug for myself at all, I can always tell who I'm meant to work with and who not. So I know if I'm meant to work with someone and they're negative or testy, I was like that myself. It means that they're just in fear and I can work them through it. I can turn something around. Something will come out that they need to hear and relax because that's the way it happened to me. But so some of it's fear. Some of it is the peer pressure. Don't go to psychics. Oh, they're the work of the devil. I used to hear that a long time ago, not so much anymore. Sometimes people aren't ready. Sometimes it's the wrong teacher. I don't like the words right or wrong. It's not the best teacher. They're really not meant to be there. All kinds of stuff, you know, goes on. If it's, I always say, if you don't know, now I say, I didn't then, if you don't know what to do, don't worry about it, don't do it. So even if it was the best teacher and the best class, if you're not ready, it's okay. I have learned that somebody else will come around or that person will come around later.
Yeah, and you know, again, a lot of people, you know, get really uptight thinking, oh, my God, what am I doing? See, the thing that's really funny is mine started when I was 6 years old and I didn't have a choice in the matter because I had a freaky accident that opened up everything inside of me.
Wow, what was the accident?
I was sitting on top of my oldest brother's shoulders when I was 6 years old, and he was like, I think, 10, 11, and bouncing around like he was a horse. And he actually lost control of my hands, and when he did, I literally went flying into the air, you know, like in these movies how it shows my flying in the air. Well, I did that, but I landed with my head and neck under my back. So by all rights, I should be dead or paralyzed, and I'm neither one. You know, my brothers, I'm sure, thought I was dead because I just laid there. You know, but while I laid there, it was strange things happened to me. Like, you know, I never saw the white light that I can remember, but I did hear this beautiful, beautiful angelic voice telling me, you're okay, Nancy. There's nothing wrong with you. You know a lot of things now. You can't use it yet. We'll let you know when.
So
As I laid there, this went on and on and being told me on and on and on. And I don't know how long I laid there. My brothers finally, you know, were going to turn me over. But just before they really turned me over, I actually opened my eyes. And what was really kind of, you know, it would probably freaked out most people. I mean, I knew I was looking at the ground, but I was laying on my back, you know. But
I got it. And you're in some other world, reality.
Right, and I wasn't afraid because I had this beautiful voice talking to me the entire time. And so my brothers rolled me over. My first comment was, well, hi, guys. And it was never, ever, ever talked about. Never.
They never told your parents? You didn't either?
Nothing. And I actually, what happened to me after that, Victoria, is that I could look at people and I knew when they were going to die. But at 6 years old, if I went to approach somebody to say, you need to be careful or don't do this, don't do that, I would get this voice that said to me, Nancy, this is not your concern. It's already been decided and it's already been chosen and okayed.
Wow.
They will go to a better place. So, I mean, I grew up like that, all right? Not really. They protected me, so I did not have to go through all of that stuff about, oh, she's weird, she's strange, let's experiment.
Oh,
on,
I
let's
did.
Block
oh, my
up.
God. That's why I was afraid of it, afraid of doing this, because I didn't want people seriously remember saying to myself, I don't want people looking at me like I look at them. But they did.
Yeah.
Doing interior design for a long time because I wanted it to remain seeming normal. I didn't have friends. You know, but little by little, people found out, and some people did drop me. And the ones that didn't, I'm still friends with today because I really respect them that they put up with what they thought was probably a horrible thing because they cared about me. And those are people I knew from Hong Kong days that are still in England now. They're in England now. So you had a, despite what happened to you, your accident, you had a, I think, a better experience than I did. Oh, I was in such resistance. You were too young to resist it.
Yeah, I was like too young, so I said I didn't really have a choice, you know. So, you know, but I understand when most people start to come into their awakening, you know, and they start to see things or hear things, and they really believe that they're crazy, you know. And so
adamantly hostile about the whole thing, refused to do it. But some people do. And the classic stories of people that would, you know, talk to somebody in the air, so to speak, that end up in mental institutions is, you know, rampant.
Oh, yeah. So, you know, what was really funny, because I grew up with this, like I said, not really being able to tell anybody or talk to anybody, but I had my voices. So they actually raised me. So I wrote an autobiography called Raised by Angels, which is the story
of what
I went through. But what was really cool is that I, you know, they would download me with all these things that are going on today and have been going on. And, you know, I would constantly hear 2010 in my head. And I was going, you know, what's 2010? You know, I'm, you know, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years old. And it's like, that's a long time away. Okay. So I didn't really get it, but I didn't question it because I didn't know what part to question.
Right.
But they would show me all these things that were going to be going on, and I would know what people were doing. I would know who was going to, you know, be hurt. And it was like I knew all these things. But they wouldn't let me approach people. And then what happened, and this is really important for a lot of people who are listening, what happened to me is that when I was a freshman or sophomore in high school, now up until that time I was not allowed to say anything, or it didn't work where I would say anything. But on that particular day, my brother was driving the car, and his girlfriend and her brother were in the front, and I was in the back. And where I came from back in Illinois, they didn't have a speed limit at the time, so we were probably going about 65 miles an hour, and there's a two-lane highway we were on because they didn't have four lanes where I was, and there was a hill. Well, as we started to go toward this hill, I get this video played in front of my face that's showing me what's going to happen to us on the other side of this hill if it isn't changed, and we were all going to die, okay?
Wow.
And I thought, holy cow. So I start saying to my brother, you better slow down the car. And my brother, who's my brother, says, yeah, right. I said, no, you really need to slow down this car because we're going to have, you know, probably something happen to us on the other side of the hill. He goes, oh, yeah, right, sis. And so we started up the hill going 65. Now, they're showing me, this is the constant replay, what they showed me is on the other side of this hill and about 500 yards beyond the bottom of the hill is a road that comes out of to the right, and we're headed north, and coming southbound is a school bus. It showed me this white car is going to come out and stop in our lane, thinking that the school bus will pass before we get there. Okay, but that's not what was going to happen, not at all. But that was in that person's mind. So as we start up the hill, I get louder and louder because it's like, I'm not dying today. I'm not being showed this vision so I can die. You know, but again, you got to remember, I never mentioned anything to anybody about what I saw, what I knew, what I felt.
So your brothers had never heard a thing about anything.
No.
Ever.
And so,
we
start up, we get to the top of the hill, and there's that school bus coming, and I knew there was going to be a white car coming out of the side road there. So I start saying to my brother, look, you slow down this car because I am not dying today, and neither are you. However, if you choose to stay stubborn, hard-headed, and all that good stuff, thinking you know better, then expect to die today. But I don't want to die, so you slow down this car. So going down the hill, I'm getting louder and louder, and goes, what's the matter with you? I said, look, laugh at me tomorrow when you're still alive, and don't ever talk about it if you don't want to, but today you slow down this car because I am not dying today. And so he finally started slowing down the car to about 45. Well, that white car came out of there, but instead of hitting the car broadside going 65, we actually sideswiped that car going 45. So everybody lived that day, okay?
So I had the accident, oh, my God, which, of course, didn't need to happen.
You know, no. So, and this is the first time they really allowed me to say anything. So I was the only one that got hurt. But I was also the only one. Yeah, but I was the only one who got out of the car, made all the phone calls to the police department, fire department, the school, my mom, because she didn't have a car. Everything that needed to be done, like I was in total control. It was amazing, okay?
Yeah, totally. I'm going to send you something, if you remind me. I'm not in my office next to my computer right now. A story about a kid that did just that very thing. It's called Steve Harrison's Radio Report. And you should be on the mailing list anyway if you don't know about it. About something that happened in the last couple of weeks, just very similar to what you're talking about. And I saved it. I'll send it to you. This is amazing.
No,
so what did your brother do?
Well, but see, again, nobody ever talked about this, but what happened is that
what did your parents find out about the sideswipe car? What did you tell your parents?
But see, I didn't, again, say too much of anything because everybody was just, you know, so happy that we were all alive. So I didn't say anything, and it was... So we all went to the hospital, and they said we all were okay and stuff, and that nobody was hurt. And then we went home. My mom didn't have a car, so she had a neighbor person pick us up. And to get into our back door of a house, to get to the main level, you had to walk up about 5 steps. And when I walked in the door, my mom was standing at the top of the step. And the first thing she said to me, and this did it, she said, "I'm glad you didn't ruin your pretty white teeth." Well, wherever I was, I came out of it, and I collapsed on the floor, and I couldn't walk for a month because I had pulled every muscle and tendon from the base of my skull to my heels.
Oh, God.
And the reason that happened is because one of my legs went under the back of the front seat, and the other one went through it, and the rest of my body went over the seat. And if I hadn't gotten tangled up in the seat, I would have gone through the front windshield. You know,
wow.
So they saved me, but I was the only one that was hurt. Everybody else was fine.
So you're
something. Yeah, no, so I was pretty angry, you know, and I said, I laid there and couldn't move because I was in pain, I said, "Look, if I have all this ability, why are you not letting me tell people? Why are you not letting me help people? I want an answer to this because this is ridiculous. You've done this to me since I was 6 years old." I mean, I was, like, livid, okay?
And you were 13 at this time?
I think I was 14 or 15.
Oh.
And here's the answer I got, Victoria, and it's a really good one. So I want everybody out there to listen because you've got to pay attention to this. The answer they gave me was, if we would have allowed you to tell people what you knew at that young age of 6 years old through now, they would have locked you up, thought you were crazy, done all kinds of experiments on you, and you would not finish what you're here to do. Okay, and I thought, what?
I had even already mentioned in this conversation, we've never really talked ever before, that people used to get locked up, you know, for this in other times, and maybe even now in other countries.
You know, so they actually protected me my whole life, you know, and the thing is, Victoria, I mean, you went through your fears, and most people go through their fears. Because a lot of people are afraid to say, hey, you know, I'm seeing this, I'm feeling this, and on and on, because of that very reason that other people are not going to accept them. They're going to think that they're weird, strange, or crazy. And then chances are they would probably be put in a mental hospital because they would be, you know, through society thinking they're weird, strange, and crazy. But the good thing is that a lot of times are changing now. So a lot of younger children that are here now, that they call the indigo children, the star children, the crystal, they're all very, very intuitive, and they already know, even though they're not being able to use it yet because our society hasn't quite got there yet. But with people like you, Victoria, helping people understand that they're not weird, strange, or crazy, that's a big plus.
And I love that. I love making this stuff normal. I've never really fit in with psychic groups or people, and I'm not being arrogant. I just never have.
No, I haven't either.
I became adamant that I was going to stay mainstream, again out of fear, and fear of rejection, that people would laugh at me, ridicule me, I wouldn't have a career anymore. Now, this is back when I was still doing interior design and didn't want to do psychic work at all. I even made myself hard to find. I had an office in the design center in San Francisco. The sign outside my door said Victoria Bullis Interior Design. And I saw reading clients from 4 till 7 at night, and I never promoted myself ever. People just found me, and I didn't want to do it. They had to find me because I wasn't going to go find them.
Mm-hmm.
But in the radio, that's a whole other story for another show. That's a really funny thing about how I got in the radio 21 years ago. I mean, it's really funny. It's humorous, but way too much for today. So the people that were, which I never was, a hippie, or you know the flower children, or the, mm-hmm. the 1970s people following John Denver, who was a very close friend of mine in real life in this lifetime and is still mm-hmm. around me all the time, but following his kind of music and the lackadaisical, you know, Rocky Mountain stuff and living out in nature, that these people are now grandparents. So they mm-hmm. had kids who grew up with a more open way of looking at things than, and of course they were ridiculed too, but they didn't care. And they had children who now have children who have children.
Mm-hmm.
Now, so we've got three or four generations of people that do look at life in a more,
open,
less constricted by society type of way. And
yeah.
so these indigo children, and now the indigo children have children. I was on a radio station recently, mm-hmm. and they couldn't believe that I was in Florida, in Miami. They couldn't believe I didn't know what the name of the indigo children's generation is, because I didn't realize they were having kids that were called something else now. So it is spreading. It's big in England. It's huge in England. And Europe. It's huge all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a place that would be good for you to go talk at, or at least know about. It's in Hong Kong, where I live again. It's called the New Age Shop.
Mm-hmm.
And if you Google it, you'll find it. I'd get in their mailing list, because they have people coming from all over the world, every country, who do things. And then the Beatles brought out Following a Guru, which I've never been into either. But people, follow gurus. I think it's a big deal these days.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I believe that we've moved into a society where it's acceptable, which I don't think 5 or 6 years ago it was. Partly because of the economic collapse or
right.
downsize. It's not a collapse yet. That people needed new answers, so they were trying new approaches. And they'd buy different books, and then The Secret came out.
Yeah.
You know, that shifted a lot of people. That came out in November of either 05 or 06.
Mm-hmm.
And by February 1st of the next year, it was the number one DVD in the history of the United States as far as sales were concerned. Any DVD. And there were lots of DVDs back then. So things have changed. I really see it. And the way it came about for me to accept this and love it and embrace it, which I do now, happened only in 2003.
Mm-hmm.
I do, because I've been on the radio a lot and I live in L.A., I know a few people. You have to when you're here. So I was at a party in Hollywood, and I always hid. All my life, I hid what I was doing. I never told people what I was doing. I said, when I was doing interior design, I said, I do interior design. When I gave that up, I kept it going for another 12 or 13 years because I did not want to be seen as a weird person. But then I got so busy with radio stuff and so on, something had to go. And I clearly got that if I didn't give up the interior design, I was going to make a massive mistake, make an error or something that would do it for me. So I gave it up because I was warned, like you were about the going over the hill.
Yeah.
So I gave it up reluctantly, and then I started telling people I'm a life coach. I would not say I was a psychic until 2003 in November. I was at a party in Hollywood. There was a big director there who's now a good friend of mine, and I was so enamored of talking to him. I was so happy to listen to. He just directed a big movie, which I can't tell you who it is.
Okay.
And I was talking about it, and he was interested in me, and I was so excited. He talked for about an hour, and I was just lapping it up. And I was asking him questions, and then he said, enough about me. What do you do for a living? And I said, I'm a psychic. Then my face got red. I slapped my hand over my mouth. I was like, oh, my God, how could I possibly have said that? How horrible. You know, and I thought I'd blown it. I was starting to get depressed right then and there. And he said, you are? I love that stuff. Tell me more.
Mm-hmm.
Couldn't believe it, that I was so adamant. See, we live in these little boxes of our own reality. Whether it's a good one or not so good one, or some of both, it's time to break through any of our barriers. I was still not telling people I did readings, even though that was my sole source of income. They found me on the radio, or they were old clients, or it was word of mouth. And when he said, "What do you do?" I mean, I couldn't believe it. So I started telling him, and he said, "I want to come and see you." I couldn't believe it. I mean, you could probably hear us. I could not believe it.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the first time I had ever told anybody. It was because I channeled something. I channeled myself or whatever. It was time and overtime. And so I started tentatively telling people. I go, "Oh, I love it." People just loved it. So now it took me a good 10 or 15 months, 8 to 12 months, let's say, before I started getting comfortable with only saying that. And it didn't bother me at all when people got turned off, because I realized, I remembered how I was about it. So the few people that turned off didn't faze me a bit, but people ended up loving it. Mm-hmm. And I, and that turned me around.
See, and here's what I say to people. They say, "Well, what do you do?" Because I've been doing this for 39 years professionally. I said, "I'm an intuitive life coach, better known as a psychic."
And oh, that's like a good one.
Yeah, and they go, "What?" I said, "I'm an intuitive life coach, better known as a psychic. I help people with their lives. You can call it anything you want, but that's what I am." But I've not been afraid to do that forever, because, like I said, I was already put into this for the long haul, apparently. But it's real important, I think, Victoria, that a lot of people understand that it's not a crime, it's not a sin, and you're not dirty or disgusting, if you allow your psychic ability to come out. Because if people want to doubt this, just pick up the Bible and read Corinthians 1 and 2, and it will tell you that God gave all these gifts to people, whether it's through mental ability, talking ability, reading something, or whatever. It's right there in the Bible, but the religious aspect is that they teach people that we're evil and we're horrible,
right,
and we must be from the devil. But if people really read the Bible like they claim that they do, they would understand that that's not true. Because if you think about this, all of the people that are in that Bible, we're all prophets. Well, we can't go around today saying, "Oh, I'm a prophet," because then they will lock you up. But you can say psychic, and they are actually the same meaning and the same words. It's just different time frame that they were used.
Oh, that's interesting. I've never seen it that way. Can I ask you, did you grow up with a traditional religion?
Well, see, I was Presbyterian, but I'll tell you what happened after I had my accident, and I was 6 years old. I said to my mom, I said, "I'm not going to church anymore." And she looked at me and said, "What?" I said, "I'm not going." She said, "Oh, yes, you are." I said, "No, I'm not." And so this went on for about a day, and I said, "I'm not going." I said, "I'll tell you what, I'll go on Christmas and Easter, and I'm not going any other time." And finally, my mom got smart enough to ask me, "Why? Why do you not want to go?" And it was really funny, because you got to picture this at age 6. I said, "I don't understand," because I was raised in a trailer court, where people were crazy most of the time, and they did all kinds of crazy things. I said, "I don't understand how these people that go here on a Sunday, they put on these fancy clothes and they think they're okay, and all the rest of the days they are absolutely mean and nasty to everybody and not happy. And so they go for one day and think that they're all okay." I said, "I don't understand that, so I'm not going." And I didn't.
Well, okay. I tried that with my mother about a variety of things. It didn't work in my case. We're like the yin and the yang, Nancy, which it means two ends of the same spectrum. But you had
right.
one experience
right.
and I had another. I was brought up Catholic. My mother was Catholic. Her father was big in the Episcopal Church and a big member of the Masons. And my dad was Presbyterian. And then he had a whole branch of his family that were Jehovah's Witnesses. We had some other religion. What was it? Those are enough.
Mm-hmm.
So I had a lot of... Oh, I grew up in a really Jewish neighborhood. Everybody were merchants. And I started babysitting when I was 11. And all these little Jewish kids, and I was good. Who would entrust an 11-year-old kid to babysit, including...
Right.
But I guess I came across as being really trustworthy. So I nailed the whole neighborhood as far as being babysitting. So I learned, I would sit there when the kids were having Jewish instruction, learning how to do the alphabet, Hebrew alphabet. I played the dreidel game at Hanukkah. I mean, it was always really, really comfortable for me, which stood me in good stead when I moved to Hong Kong and was doing interior design. I had the whole Jewish contingent in Hong Kong. Zim lines to private people, and I'm still in touch with some of them, or their descendants. So I had a wide variety, thank goodness, of little influences here and there. But my mother wore the pants of the family, so I was going to Catholic school, and I begged her not to send me. I begged in fourth grade not to go. I cried, and I stamped my foot, and I wouldn't come out of my bedroom. So you won, and I didn't win with your mother. it's a whole different ball game.
But the only reason why I won is because she finally asked me why. You know, why do you not want to go? And I mean, coming out of a child's mouth of what I have, observed, where these people are really mean and nasty, beat each other up all day, all week long. They go out, they drink, they do all these things. But come Sunday, they're sitting there like Mr. and Ms. Perfect. And it's like, no, that's not really who they are, And so it did make a difference. And then later, when I turned like 18, I started going to many different churches to find out what they were talking about in each church. And in reality, they really all are talking about the same thing. It's just saying it differently, okay? So it just, to me, people need to find who they are inside from their heart, smart part is what I call it,
right.
And follow that. Even if it means that you're a little different than somebody else, it doesn't mean you're wrong.
I had a dream in the early 90s, a big, vivid dream. I was never into gurus. I ended up being so Catholic. I went to Catholic elementary school, high school, university. Then I taught in one. And then I dumped religions of all types right then and there from seeing the hypocrisy, from seeing it from the inside. I guess I needed to go through all of that. So when I did drop any religion ever, I said to myself, I am never, ever joining any group whatsoever. And that was out of anger and feeling duped and, hostility and so on, which I don't know why I keep mentioning hostility, but people would never think I was a hostile person because I'm not. These are moments in my life when I needed to shift something.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, I'm never joining any group again. And that was, on a pendulum side, it was way over to the left or to the right. And I adamantly refused to. Never have, and then at some point it got neutral, and I just thought, I don't want to join any group. I don't want to go down to the lowest common denominator. So I'm in the middle, I'm neutral, and I still won't join any group. So I didn't follow any gurus, was never interested in it. They were always men, and they were talking like the Catholic Church, somebody sitting on their throne and telling you how it's going to be. Mm-hmm. So I was never, never into it. So one day in the early 90s, I had a dream. Came out of nowhere because I wasn't thinking of gurus or anything like that. And I got a big message from Yogananda.
Mm-hmm.
I live in L.A. right above the Lake Shrine Temple. And I didn't even know I was doing that when I got this place. No. So Yogananda came to me in a dream. And he said, I won't forget that one either because it was crystal clear. Gurus are a thing of the past. People are now educated, they have longer lives, they have better medicine, better food, lots of opportunities. Back then, there was still some stuff on computers, it was a long time ago, 20 years ago. And people can get their libraries and inexpensive education through community colleges all over the world and so on. People don't need to listen blindly to any one person telling them how it's going to be. It was such a vivid dream. I woke up in the morning, wow, that was really cool. I had already felt that or known that one. It wasn't a revelation, but the way it came through and the depth and the intensity of it was a revelation. Mm-hmm. And then, within 6 weeks, I got a Deepak Chopra book, and I met him in 1983. That's another long story. It's a really long story. Anyway, so I got a latest book of his, and I opened it up, and he said in the very words I heard in my dream, something like, gurus are a thing of the past. Nobody needs a guru anymore. And, of course, he had followed one that got into the States and so on. So, this is validating what you're saying, that I'm paraphrasing what you're saying, but there are lots of avenues, and we can get our own information. We don't need to listen to somebody telling us how it has to be, their technique, their way. Techniques are fine for people that are really left brain. Going back to what you said earlier, a lot earlier today, about you don't need to take classes and so on, a lot of people are very left-brain, which I was, meaning that they're into analysis. Some people are into chemistry. Some people are into accounting, finance, and so on. They're really, really left-brain. They were never taught. How many kids, unless they're very evolved parents, are taught how to develop their intuition growing up? Not many.
Right.
Not many at all. So they're taught to get good grades, do everything you're taught to do to be, quote, quote, right. When you're right, if you're good, you get a gold star. Or you get to graduate. Or you get to get into a good university. You've always got to be right and ahead of the game and so on. For a lot of people. Other people, it's just like making sure you pay your bills on time and things like that. So some of those people that are really stuck in left brain or reality or fear, of which I was both, need to have somebody explain things. So I think classes and so on are fine, but you've got to have the right class and the right teacher, the best class and
right
teacher for what you need right then.
Well, yeah, that's why I said it has to resonate with the person, you know. So, and if people, in my belief, Victoria, if people would just listen to their first gut feeling, again, the heart smart part, they would know what to go to and what not to go to. I mean, like when you went to the classes, you weren't comfortable, you didn't really want to be there, so you knew, but you wanted to do the thing that everybody tells you to do, and that's you got to have somebody teach you, you got to do this, you got to do that. I do believe that people should take classes, but only ones that resonate with them.
Amen.
So
amen.
Here's what you're going to love that you don't know about me unless you look at my website.
I haven't.
Okay, well, I'll send it to you after we're done.
Send me
but
a link.
Well, I'll tell you right now, just go to theschoolofnow.org. See, I was channeled that one of my things that I was supposed to do was to start a school. And I said,
really?
No, I'm not. No, I argued with him. I said, no, I'm not.
I did that. Oh, I argued with my guides, too. I'll tell you how I argued.
All the time. All the time.
When you're done, I'll tell you the story of how I could be making millions of dollars if I hadn't won the argument with my spirit guides. But tell me your story first.
So, and this won't take very long. So it was channeled to me to get a 501c3 called the Child's Miracle Mind, Inc., which I did. Then it channeled to me, you're going to build a school. I said, no, I'm not. They said, yes, you are. And I said, fine, where am I going to build a school at? And so they gave me some different areas. But I didn't know for sure until I looked at the Michael Scallion future map of the world and said, oh, I need to be right there. Well, right there happened to be in New Mexico. So I literally took 4 generations of my family, my mom, my daughter, my granddaughter, myself, and we moved down here to New Mexico to find land, find funding, build a school, and open it. And the school is called the School of Now, and it's a school that, when it's finished, will accommodate 500 students, 350 live-in, and 120-day students. And it's for children. It's for children who have been labeled with ADD, ADHD, problem children, children that don't fit the bell curve, the intuitive children, and the ones that are just outright bored, which basically at this time of lifespan includes 98% of the student body worldwide. So that's what I've been guided to do. So I got land, so now I'm going to raise money to build this school. And that's, you know, that's what I'm trying to do to help these children that are not getting a fair shake. Like you grew up in fear, you know, and many children grow up in fear for the same reason. But this
almost all
is different, and it will allow each individual child to be each individual child and know who they are and encourage them the entire way. And it's for K through high school.
Okay.
So that's what I'm doing. So now what's your story? Before you do that, give out,
are you in New Mexico?
I'm 23 miles south of Albuquerque in Las Lunas, which is the moons. Okay.
Yeah, I've seen it on the map. I have been to Santa Fe probably 50 times.
Okay.
Easily. All the way through the 80s into the 90s, 5 or 6 times a year. Oh, probably more than 50 times. And I'm not going to go anymore because of the last time I went, which was 09. Have you heard of chemtrails?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I had some chemtrails run right over me, and I was physically a mess. So I think I needed to cut ties with Santa Fe. But I sort of miss it, and I'm sort of done with it, too. But I know New Mexico like the back of my hand. I don't know Las Lunas, but I know Albuquerque quite well, and everything about Santa Fe and surrounding areas. That's really, really interesting that you're telling me the story. I'll see how we can talk off air. And
yeah,
how
we will.
Support you
I will
with your school because it's wonderful.
Yeah.
One of my things about ADD is I feel that I was a school teacher. I taught at a Catholic school. And I'm proud of what I did. I was a good teacher. I had 40 kids in each class. I taught bilingually. And I was really, really compassionate. I did a good job and didn't have a lot of, I didn't have much help at all. But what I'm saying this about school teachers is based on the fact that I was one, they're trained to look at how to teach children the subject matter they need to teach them. And they're not trained to teach a lot more. I'm passionate about teaching teachers how to teach intuition.
Mm-hmm.
Their own intuition for kids.
Right.
And anyway, that's a whole story we can do off air. But anyway, I'm fascinated with your project. I'd love to help you with it. And I know you are absolutely guided. I can see your spirit guides up there. It's a really lovely story. I'm sure there's something I can do to help you. I'm not sure what it is yet. One of the things I do get for you, though, is to start right now to make this into a documentary. Start filming the land. You know, start talking, filming people that you have to apply for permits with, contractors. Sorry, there's somebody above me hammering.
That's okay. Yeah, actually, you know, we've already talked.
I think it was the universe, like punctuating a point, but there is a hammering up there too.
It's knocking on my door saying, "You better get this done."
Exactly. Do a documentary, and I can probably send you some people that can help you. You know, I could steer you in a right direction here or there, a good direction for people to help you with the documentary, but it's really inexpensive these days. What I get to tell you is to start watching YouTube, anything on YouTube, because YouTube, people become sensational overnight, and there's a lot of divine support for people to get famous overnight. This is one wonderful avenue. Now, some of it is the kind of stuff that is really slapsticky or silly, stupid, not good, you know, depressing, but you don't want that audience anyway. There's plenty of, sorry about the noise upstairs.
That's okay.
Plenty of people, including a couple of my clients, have become famous. One, because I encouraged you to do it, and one that got me to realize the value of it, so I started encouraging other people. And if you start watching different kinds of things on YouTube, no matter what the subject matter is, you'll see that you don't have to be super uber professional in filmmaking to be able to put something together.
Yeah, in fact,
I also get that you need to be at Sundance this coming year. So start planning now. I'm very serious.
Yeah, no, the people that I started working with since I got down here and my guides, we've kind of gone into that, and it's going to be more because I just mentioned that today to a person that I wanted to do a documentary. So,
amazing.
You're right on.
Amazing.
You know,
probably a coincidence,
There's a lot, and we'll talk off air, like you said, but I want you to give out, Victoria, your website and how people can get a hold of you, please.
Okay, Victoria Bullis, B-U-L-L-I-S. Google me, too. There's a lot of stuff that I've been doing this forever now, and now I'm okay with saying it, which I didn't used to be, didn't want people to know. And my email is victoria@victoriabullis.com. I have a toll-free number, but there's been a problem with it for a couple of months. Nobody seems to be able to fix it. Maybe I'm supposed to give it up. So I don't give it out anymore. And I do a blog. It used to be every month. Now I'm finishing up July's, as we finish up July. But my spirit guides give a little blessing and a healing to anybody that checks out my website. So do I have time to tell you my little story?
Yeah.
I forgot what the story was about. What was your story about?
My story was how I got down to New Mexico.
What was mine? I have a story. Go back a little bit. Go back to before how you got to New Mexico. The last story you told before that.
It was, I was arguing with my spirit guides about how I was not going to do it.
That's it. So right from the get-go, I did not want to be like the people in my class or the teachers But when I finally learned from seeing this person's spirit guide, you know, the teacher's spirit guide behind me, I started being pretty good at everything, and including channeling came very, right then. I started channeling right then really easily. And I didn't want to be like other people. I didn't want to say, oh, now my dear little one, what they want you to know is whatever. I've always been very pragmatic, and I just couldn't abide that. And so, but my voice would change. It would change for every person I did readings for. And I kept telling my spirit guides, no, I don't want to do this. I want to be a regular person. And I do know that that was part of my life's purpose. I just didn't understand it, to show people this is part of their life, just in the way you opened up the segment today, where it's just what we all have. And I really got passionate about it for myself, not wanting to seem weird. It was the reason then. Now I realize I had a good thing going, I just didn't understand it, but this is part of life, and I want people to feel I'm a normal person, and now they do. And then they adapt things because they're around me, and they think that, okay, she's acceptable. She's accepted. People like her. Maybe I can do this too, and I love that. I love it when people get things from me by osmosis, so to speak. It makes me really happy, including being more intuitive. Anything, as long as they don't drain me while they're doing it. So I kept arguing with my spirit guides. I don't want to change. I don't want my voice to change. And they said, we know better than you do. Well, that smacked to me of guru stuff, even though it was from my spirit guides. I said, no, I refuse to do this. I will not have my voice change. Finally, one day they said, okay, your voice will not change. You will sound when you're channeling the way you always do. And I said, good. Something it was sort of like, yeah, there was more to it than that. Well, that was a few years before I went in the radio. Well, then people wanted to know if I could channel Elvis Presley or these different people, and I could not change it. Once I changed it to not having my voice change, I had no idea what was going on the radio. I had no idea about any of this stuff. And if I could sound like Elvis Presley, which I could have if I hadn't been adamant and refused to do it that way, or anybody that died, Ronald Reagan, other people have come through, hundreds of people have come through. If I could have sounded like they did, you know, I would be all over the map, all over the world. Anyway, it was that was my little story about arguing with my spirit guides and seeming to win, but really didn't.
Yeah, it doesn't work like that. We think it does.
No.
But it doesn't. You end up following what the guides are telling you, which is actually a good thing, not a bad thing. But, you know, we tend to let our humanness get in the way, thinking we know better, which we really don't.
Yeah.
Victoria, give out your website and your email address again, because we only have like about 2 minutes left.
Oh, okay. Victoria Bullis, BULLIS.com. And my email is victoria@victoriabullis.com, and then Google me because there's some fun stuff. I love to have fun. I did lots of. I used to be in Stuff magazine. I had the back page of Stuff magazine until it went under, doing a dead celebrity interview. I love having fun. I mean, I really love having fun. I love what I do now. Took me a long time. Sometimes I say I'm one of the slowest learners I know, but you know, it's good to laugh at oneself.
Yeah, no, it's good to have fun. So if somebody calls you, Victoria, and they want to have a reading with you, how long do your readings last?
I do 15, 30, and 45-minute sessions. I don't talk about price unless it's in a personal phone call.
Right, which is the way to do it. Now, but you also talk about soulmates and you do channeling.
Oh, my God, I do everything. I love one of the things I love doing right now is helping people make more money. There's so much money out there. And people are contracted and in fear about losing their job or getting a job that doesn't work for them, or they get one that doesn't work, and they're just so happy to have part of their bills paid. But it's a whole different world. Everything has changed. Nothing is the same. And I love working with people. I'm having a better relationship, developing intuition so they don't have the wrong relationships or buy the wrong house and have their dog run out in the street at the wrong time, and to make money and so on. It's a very cool world out there, COOL.
It is.
Cool. And I love helping people, you know, transform something by talking to me at the end of the session feeling different about something important in life. It makes me really happy. I mean, really, really happy. I'm not just saying I told you all the pathos about all the years of doing readings and not wanting to. Now I love it.
Mm-hmm. which is really good. We have just 1 minute left almost, so I just, real quick in 1 minute, is there anything you can tell people to help them trust themselves to at least lighten up to let things come through?
Yes, before you go to sleep at night, we're more open to our subconscious and unconscious. Just say to your unconscious, subconscious, and spirit guides, help me to have messages in the morning. Help me to have dreams, inspiration, words. Help me to be in the right place at the right time for that, to be able to feel better about my life, to be more prosperous, whatever you want to ask for, healthier, to be less in fear, and to have a better life. This is the best, for all of us alive, this is the best life we've ever had.
Mm-hmm.
Most of our lives were like dying of starvation or drowning on a boat as fishermen or, you know, being attacked by marauding hordes from another country, the way it is still for a lot of people in the world. And this is the best life we've ever had. And people take things for granted and they're victims and they're angry. Like, this is a wonderful time to be alive. I read in today's paper, the LA Times, that the economy wasn't very good for the first half of this year, and so it's going to start getting worse. I went, what? This has been a great 6 months for anybody I know, and including clients that, you know, that they're in the Midwest, back east, Florida, South Africa, wherever. It really is good. Don't read the news either. Get books like The Power of Now by Eckhart Tolle, speaking of your school.
Mm-hmm.
Start reading. Put your attention on positive stuff, and you'll be amazed at what starts happening. It sounds like a Pollyanna-type story, but it's true. What you focus on, you create.
Especially
watch CSI Miami. You're just wasting your time putting more negativity in your life, or CSI anything. Even though I do like Chris O'Donnell, who lives in my town, I do occasionally see 2 or 3 minutes of him on CSI LA for that reason. But don't watch that stuff. Go read a book on how to create some more income. Find out how to sell on eBay. You know, do something positive in your life. Don't dwell on the negative stuff. When Casey, whatever her name is, was let go in Florida recently, the vitriol, I have a lot of people on Facebook, the vitriol, the negativity that people were saying, just horrible stuff, like she's going to burn in hell and so on. Just, I couldn't believe how many people focused horrible, horrible energy on that.
Yeah, but that's thanks to the media.
And also Amy Winehouse.
Yeah.
So she deserved to die. I read that a ton of times. These aren't my Facebook friends, but these are radio people who comment in to radio stations. And you know, it's like, if that's the way you focus your attention and that gets your juices flowing, my God, what's your life like?
Yeah. Victoria, our time is actually up. I'm going to call you back shortly as soon as we get off the air because there's a lot more we can talk about. But I'd like to thank you for taking the time and being on the show.
It was fun. Thank you for having me. I think we went off in different directions than we were going to, but I had a great time, and I hope that your audience liked it.
I think we had a great time, too, but thank you very much. I'd like to thank you, the listeners. May God bless all you. Have a great week, and we'll talk soon. Take care. Bye now.
Bye-bye.